I didn't know if you guys wanted to do FaceTime audio, or can you? Am I clear enough for you guys?
You sound really clear to us. Can you hear us okay?
Yep. Yeah, loud and clear.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to hit it right now.
Siri, turn it up. Google, turn it up. Alexa, volume 10.
Wait, hold up. I think they hate people tell me take my time, right? Nah, they tired of waiting. They say crazy, so you so, man. For real?
What's up, John?
How we doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Yeah. It's been a few weeks since we did an episode, and we're really excited this week to have somebody that I've known for a long time, and I've gotten to know him better in the last few years. But his name is Aaron Thomas, and he's joining us. Say hello, Aaron.
Hello. We have known each other a long time.
We have. Like, I am pretty sure that I've known you your whole life.
Yeah.
You know, like, we used to always come over to your house, and you and your two brothers were straight savages. And
yes, we were.
Or are, and we always had fun. But I've gotten to know you on a different level here the last couple of years, and we took a trip to Vegas together and hung out, and I thought you would be a great guest for us.
Yeah, I'm kind of wishing I missed out on Vegas this year, man. I was sad not to be there.
Yeah, there were some good games this year. I chose not to go this year. Just kind of, I'm still reeling from last year, I think. It's really what it is.
Oh, I have a funny story about flying home after last year. Maybe we can get into that.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead, man. There's no script here, so you do what you need to do.
Yeah, so if my memory serves me correctly, and it may not because I was under the influence, but my flight left Vegas at around 4 or 5 p.m. Vegas time, and my brother and I think had played golf that morning, so we'd been playing 18 holes, you know, drinking on the golf course. We came back to the casino, had a few more drinks while we were watching games. And I remember I Ubered to the airport. I thought I had plenty of time, so I went to a bar and was just watching. I think the Cubs were on. Uh-huh. I'm a Cubs fan. And I totally lost track of time because I think it was a little alcohol-induced irresponsibility. And I heard my name being paged over the McCarran Airport intercom. Aaron Thomas, we need you to report to gate, whatever. Immediately, we're closing the doors.
You were that guy, huh?
I was that guy. And so, you know, sprinting out of the bar, I'd actually just ordered a sandwich, and I just ran. So they were, like, making my food as I was sitting there, and I just bolted. I didn't even have time to pay or to tell them I needed it to go. Made it to the gate. Keep in mind, I reek of cigar smoke and alcohol. And I get on the plane. It's completely full with the exception of middle seats. So then I've got this choice to make of, like, what horrible act am I going to commit to, like, sit in the middle stinking of alcohol and cigarettes or cigar smoke. And I sat down in the middle near the front, and the lady next to me audibly groaned. So, and I'm like sweating and breathing hard. I stink like horribly. And it was a cross country flight to the East Coast, and I felt bad for her, but I made it. I made it on the plane.
I always wonder what's going on in someone's life that they're getting paged at the airport. You know, it's not good.
That would be an awesome, that would be such an awesome sociology experiment as to to replicate that with different people. You know, you got a bigger sweaty guy that gets just the look, you know, if they got like a, they got a camera and all you have is middle. Cause it's funny. People's reaction when they see it coming, you know, like they start putting stuff in the middle seat. Then you take a hot chick and have her walk down there to see.
I always pinch my kid's leg and make him cry. And then I hold him up like Simba and show him that there's a crying kid. You don't want to see. That's how I do it.
No, there's nothing worse than that. I hate middle seats.
Yep. So a little bit about you. Can you tell us kind of where you're from and what your family makeup is? Are you married? Do you have kids, pets?
Yeah. I grew up in mostly in Plainfield, Indiana. I lived in Georgia for 3 years when I was a kid, but we moved back to Plainfield. So that was the majority of my time. I have two brothers. I'm the oldest of three. I'm going to be 40 this year. It's crazy thinking about that. But graduated from Plainfield High School. Went to school in Tennessee, played baseball at a small school there called Milligan College. And then I became a high school English teacher after that, high school baseball coach. And got married to my wife, who we met in high school. She went to Avon. And we met on a field trip in high school. Her name's Carrie. We're married for 15 years now. We have three boys. They're 11, 10, and 8. And they are just as savage as the Thomas. It's like raising wolves, basically. And but their names are Tyson, William, and Sutter. And they're a blast. And we live in Silver. Well, we've lived in Montgomery County, Maryland, for the last 8 years now. And we just bought our first house. And we moved to Clarksburg, Maryland, which is also, it's still in Montgomery County, Maryland, but we're still settling in. And yeah, that's a little bit about me and my family.
Awesome. Congratulations on the new house. How is it going?
Thanks. It's going good now. I freaking hate moving. Yeah. And I've never moved when I've been sick before. And I had a low fever and a horrible chest cold for the entire 3 or 4 day move. And it was hell. I hated it. So I'm glad that's over.
That's the worst. You know, you never realize how much stuff you have until you try to put it into boxes and move it down the road. You know, there's a lot. So we always ask this question. It's kind of a strange one. Like, if you could go back into time, like let's say you go back into high school, what would you tell yourself to try to help yourself at this point?
Oh man. Whew. this may sound weird. I may get in trouble with my wife. I would say, don't have a big wedding. Elope. Yeah. Elope, young man. Just go to a beach and get married on a beach. Don't do the big thing and spend a lot of money. And that's the first thing that came to mind.
Hey, that's what
I probably would have said, marry that girl you're dating sooner.
Yeah.
We started dating when I was 18. We didn't get married till I was 24. I don't know what I waited for so long for, but yeah, that's one thing that comes to mind. And maybe get more tattoos. I only have one. I should have gotten more before I had kids, because now I can't afford to get any more.
So what was a 10-year-old Aaron Thomas like?
Oh, the kid that none of my friends' parents liked. Just a little mischievous, nerdy, you know, but loves sports. But I was kind of the guy that I've always been kind of accident prone and trying to get away with stuff. And it seemed like I always got caught or broke something and just annoyed my parents or my friends' parents. And that was one reason I actually really liked spending time with my wife, was that her parents both liked me. And I'd never really figured that before. And I'm like, wow, I think this is the keeper. This is the one. So
they were the ones, huh?
Yeah, I was squirrely, man. Skinny, little, squirrely, mischievous kid.
All right. So we always ask this question too. If you had to work but didn't need the money, what would you choose to do? Or are you doing that right now?
Oh, my gosh. That's a great question. If I had to work but didn't need the money, what would I do? And I would be a musician, and I don't I don't play any instruments.
That's a bad start.
I know like three songs on the harmonica.
Yeah.
But I wish I could play music really well. I think that'd be a lot of fun. Because I was thinking about, I always wanted to be like a professional baseball player or what, you know, basketball player or whatnot. But that involves losing. And when you're a musician and like you're on stage in front of people just jamming, like everybody there loves you. Everybody's rooting for you.
Well, Aaron, and I can tell you right away that that's a lie because I've been on that stage and I have not had people root for me before. I've had people say, please leave. But yeah, I get where you're coming from, though. So kind of staying with the same theme, if you could be a celebrity, who would it be?
Oh, man. Gosh, that's a tough one. I don't think I'd want to be a celebrity. So I'm like, what would I do?
I went Steph Curry just because I want to know what it's like to pull up past half court and need to be guarded.
Yeah.
Good one. I've always wanted to be able to dunk. I've never been able to dunk. So, yeah, I think I would go with someone like, who's a great dunker? I mean, I guess I got to say LeBron. I mean, Zion Williamson, man. Yeah. I would want to be Zion Williamson.
It would be good to be him right now.
That dude is a freak. I want to be like that. That's who I want to be.
There you go. So our next question is always, would you switch with them? And you've already answered that question, so I'm going to guess the answer to that is no. You're pretty happy.
Yeah, no way. No way. I would not want that spotlight or that kind of attention. Celebrity status, that is not my thing.
Well, I'm not too sure. I don't think you can probably hear what's going on right now, but we're playing a little a song that I think was your favorite in high school or junior high times. I'd do anything for love by Meatloaf.
Yeah. So, Meatloaf.
That was your favorite back in the day?
Yeah, I remember back in the day when we go to rec night at PCMS. I won't say the girl's name, but I'm pretty sure I made out to that song at an eighth grade rec night at PCMS.
I think names are necessary, man. That'd be. I get it. And your favorite song now is something by Guster. You gave me a couple different options.
Yeah, pretty much anything by Guster. Carrie and I went to their concert in, I think, February. It had been like 10 years since I've seen them in concert, and we were in the front row, and it was just incredible. It's one of my all-time favorite bands.
You know, I know nothing about that band. What draws you to them?
I mean, honestly, like, a guy living on my hallway at Purdue University my freshman year was a big Guster fan. I'd never heard of him, and he gave me one of their CDs, and I just got hooked. I just started listening to them from that point on, and it just hooked me freshman year of college.
Music, lyrics, or combination, I assume?
I'm not much of a lyrics guy. I don't really listen, because I mean, I love AC/DC. I love class. It's more about the sound. So it's the music and the sound and the way they're really creative. They each play a lot of instruments. They do wacky stuff during concerts. It's just a really creative band.
Awesome. I'll have to check them out. I had heard of them, but I had never listened to them until I pulled the music for you. Here's another question we always ask that I think is it's a hard one. It took me a while to figure this one out, but we've got nothing but time. What's the craziest thing that you've ever seen in your life?
Oh, man. the craziest thing I've ever seen. That's a hard one. You can edit out the pause, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah, no problem at all.
Craziest thing I've ever seen.
Like mine was, I ended up in this basic like narcotic apartment complex that had bales and bales of marijuana sitting along the walls.
And oh my gosh.
I mean, it was like narco stuff. That was pretty crazy. You've probably seen some crazy stuff in your profession.
I'd say two things come to mind. It's probably more like recency bias. 2 years ago in Greece, I can't remember. I think it was on the same trip where I was there working with the Greek people serving Syrian Muslim refugees there. And I was walking down the street in Athens, and I was getting ready to cross a really busy street. And this guy, this older man on a moped, pulled out and just got creamed by a car right in front of me, like 5 feet in front of me, and just went flying. And thankfully, he had a helmet on, but he broke his arm. He broke his leg. Like, his arm and his leg were bent in all crazy positions. And I was literally, I mean, he landed at my feet.
Wow.
And it was just the craziest experience. He seemed to be fine, though. He was alert. That was nuts. And then on that, I think it was the same trip. I honestly can't remember. I was the trip leader, and we had a lady on our trip. The last night we were there, our flight was leaving for the U.S. the next morning. We had to leave for the airport at like 4 a.m. So we all come down to the hotel lobby at 4 a.m. to meet up, get a taxi, and right there I've got like seven other team members. And her roommate comes down and says, hey, she never came back last night. I packed up all her stuff. I don't know where she is. And this is a young, attractive woman in the most heavily human trafficked city in the entire world, Athens, Greece.
Wow.
And I'm freaking out. Like, I don't know where she at. She is. We're calling her. Her phone's dead. So I send my team on to the airport, and another guy stays back. He chose to stay back with me because I'm like, hey, you guys got to go back, but I'm not leaving until I find out where she's at. So me and this other guy are running through the streets of Athens at 4 a.m. We're going into all these bars because we figured she's probably drunk, passed out somewhere. And in the midst of that, I was running up to people on the street, showing them her picture. Like, have you seen this lady? I did that to some transgender prostitutes who propositioned me, which was a strange. It was just a really strange occurrence. And then we ran into this building that they were standing next to, that we thought was a bar. It was actually a brothel. And it took us about 2 minutes being inside there. We were walking around asking people if they'd seen this lady. And we kind of looked at each other. We're like, this isn't a bar. This is something we've never seen before. And we ran out, but we ended up finding her. But that particular moment of walking into a brothel and not realizing it at first, because you're so focused on what you're trying to do. But we found her. She was safe. We made the flight. But yeah, those were two of the craziest things I've seen, and they happened on the same trip.
Well, we'll get into the Greece thing here in a little bit. I've got some questions on that for sure. But I've got two more quick questions, and then we'll do a couple segments here. The first is, name something that you regret the most.
Oh man, I would say, I have a lot of regret over how misogynistic, sexist, and racist I used to be. Uh-huh. I think I grew up in a very loving and household, Christian household, a good town, like a good place, but I don't think I realized how generational, like, racism and sexism and misogyny is amongst being a white male. And then I moved to the last 9 years, I've lived in the most diverse county in the entire United States. I live in the fourth most diverse city. New York City's sixth, and Silver Spring is four, and four of the top 10 most diverse cities are in Montgomery County. Wow. And it has really opened my eyes to, you know, I'm kind of a recovering racist, sexist, misogynist, and I think about some of the jokes I made, and all of it was like really like subversive, like it wasn't overt, but now that I think back on it, I'm like, wow, the way I treated this person or said this about them or that joke I made, and how hurtful that probably was, that's something I really regret.
Yeah, well, you live and learn, and I'm from where you're from, and it's definitely in the culture, you know, at least it was when I was growing up, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, last question. And this is one of my favorite questions. If you had the world's attention for 30 seconds, what would you say?
Oh man. trying to think, as I'm a pastor and a Christian, I'm trying to think of how would I get people's attention toward Christ in 30 seconds? I would figure out a very simple, polished, and magnetic way to point them to Christ in 30 seconds. I don't even know if that's possible, but that's what I would try to figure out how to do.
I guess if you get your shot, you got to take it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Went to Chick-fil-A and ordered fries.
High five.
One, two, three, four, uno, dos, tres, I know you.
High five.
I love Pitbull on that yeah. intro, on that intro music. So I've got, like, our whole thing, Aaron, is that we're trying to get the owners of Chick-fil-A to send us a all-you-can-eat card so that we can just walk into any Chick-fil-A and hand them the card, you know, like I think they call it a black card.
That exists? That's a real thing?
If it doesn't, we're trying for one. Like, we're going to try to make them make one. So we have the Chick-fil-A firing five-piece hot seat questions, and a really interesting thing is I went to baseball practice for my oldest son, and I'm an assistant coach. And the other assistant on our team is the owner of a Chick-fil-A, the local Chick-fil-A. So he doesn't know about this yet, but I'm going to definitely talk to him about hooking us up with that. So
there you go, man. I like that idea.
It was meant to be. You know, so happened that he's
great.
I know
idea.
Him now.
Hey, that's a good get. That's who you draft right there.
Yeah, you always draft him. Okay, first question. Number one, what song have you never told anyone that you like that you might be a little embarrassed about, might be a guilty pleasure, might not be great?
Yeah. I don't think anybody other than my wife knows. She knows all my embarrassing music, but I love the song Diamonds by Brianna. It's on my, I've got this random playlist that I used to mow the grass to, and Diamonds is on there. And I'm like belting it out. Like, I put my Bluetooth headphones on. I love that song.
Well, that's a good one. I actually am playing it right now because I've never heard it before. So it'll be in the background while we go here. Number two.
It's addictive.
Well, we'll be the judge of that. Everyone has a scar on their body from something dumb they did as a kid. What is your scar story?
I've got a scar. I mean, it's not really when I was a kid. I was young. It was right after I got my tattoo on my leg, and I was playing baseball, and I had shorts on, and the field was in horrible. Hit a ball in the gap during batting practice. Took off running for some idiotic reason. I decided to slide with no pants on, like with just shorts on. Gave myself a second degree burn, ripped the skin all off the side of my leg.
And
you can actually still see, like, half of my tattoo is faded because I ripped so much skin off from that part of my leg. That's the best scar I got.
What is your tattoo?
It's on my right calf, on the side of my calf.
What is it of?
It's really original. It's a cross. And it's got Matthew. It's got the Great Commission in written in red on the inside of it. Matthew 28:18-20, which people always mistake as who's Matthew. They want to know who died. You know, like that's what they think it is. I think it's like some sort of in memoriam tattoo.
Gotcha. Awesome. All right, number three. You're trapped on a desert island. You get to pick two people to be on that island with you. Who are they?
Well, I got to go with Carrie. She's pretty. That's my wife. She's a lot of fun to hang out with. And, I mean, just to be blunt, like, I'm going to have sex. So that's why she's got to be there. trying to think of who else. It's on an island. I need someone to play sports with, someone to shoot hoops with, play golf. So I'd probably go with my brother, Matt.
Yep.
Yeah.
I see what you and Matt do when you get together.
Yeah, we have a good time.
Yeah, that island might be trash by the end of one night. What would you name your boat if you had one?
Oh, man. Something from the Big Lebowski. The Dude Abides or something like that.
All right.
El Duderino, maybe, something like that.
Awesome. Last of the five, what is something that you thought was cool when you were younger, but you now realize it's just not very cool?
Just clothes, just the way I dressed.
Yeah.
I look at pictures of, oh, you know what? I had a mullet.
There it is.
I don't know what the hell is wrong with me. I don't know how I ever looked in the mirror and thought, this looks good. I have a spike on top and a mullet in the back. It was awful. Awful haircut.
Awesome. Well, that was the firing five-piece hot seat questions. Now we're going to go into another quick intro that you may or may not be able to hear. I doubt it. And it is Cuckoo's secret word of the day.
My name is Cuckoo.
Come to the door.
So what's today's secret word, Cucky? Today's secret word is the almighty bongolio.
All right, John, it's been a while since we've heard a secret word of the day from you. What is it today?
Today's word is topsy-turvy because...
Two words.
Is it one? No, I think it's one word.
Okay.
I think it's all together, but it's a word I haven't heard in a while, but it just explains the week that I've had. Nothing has gone as planned. Nothing has gone the way I thought it would go. And it's just been curveball after curveball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's been kind of a duck and move, adjust and.
Yes, it's none of it is horrible stuff. It's just expecting things to happen and they don't, or expecting things. I mean, I know that's usual life, but this week it's been more extreme. So
yeah, is it predominantly through work that you've had these issues, or is this in
no?
All
it's
of life?
It's been it's been in all facets.
It's when you get home too, huh?
Yes, it's been a combo of. I think the problem is my practices got switched this week from Tuesday Thursday to Monday Wednesday. That threw everything off. Just coming right off the weekend, right into basketball practice, and just your biorhythms and your week, and then just from there. I don't understand that we've had really beautiful weather this week, but it's like it's thrown everybody off. I don't know. I don't know if people's biorhythms are off. I don't get it. But the beautiful weather's made people go crazy. So I haven't looked outside. Maybe there's a full moon. I don't know.
I've noticed it as well. And I don't. It seems like to me it goes in waves with rain. When rain is coming in, I feel like everything goes weird in people's lives. It's like the weather really dictates how they act.
But it's strange. Almost like it's been opposite. Like we've been staring at gray and khaki, and then all like overnight everything turned green, and it's like people wanted to be anywhere but what they were doing. They just wanted to enjoy the weather, I think. And I think people's minds were elsewhere. But every time the weather turns any direction, we run into this.
All right. Well, topsy-turvy?
Turvy.
Turvy. Okay.
Yeah.
Can you spell that?
I think it's actually T-U-R-V-E-Y.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Turvy. Turvy.
Do you know the root of it, like where it comes from? Like
no, that's a slang term for, I don't know. That may be that may be 80s slang for crazy. I don't know.
All right. Well, thank you for the word. It's been a while. And Joel is not here, as you guys might have noticed, so we're not going to do the fake news because I didn't have time to find any today. So we're going to move right back into our conversation with Aaron, because I've got a lot of things I want to ask him about. Starting with Aaron, you said that you went into, you were a teacher coming out of college, and I know that's not what you do now. So do you mind telling everybody what you do, where you do it? And I guess what we'd like to know too is, was there like a specific moment in your life that moved you from teaching to what you do now? I mean, you're still teaching.
There was a specific moment. There was a specific moment that took me into the classroom as well. And that, I think that was like a major door that that led to what I'm doing now. So I was a high school teacher at Mooresville High School in the Indianapolis area. I loved it. I did that for 3 years. 3 years in, I was just in my groove, and my wife and I were married for about 18 months or so at that point. And she got the sense that we needed to do something different. And I was shocked, kind of angry at first. Like, what are you talking about? I love what I'm doing. I feel like I'm really serving well. I was coaching a bunch of different sports. I was a youth group sponsor in our church. I was doing FCA at the school. I was loving it. And I was pretty stubborn about it at first. But then I told her, I'm like, you know what? I feel like you might be right. I don't know what it means. I really had no idea. But we just started praying about it. And literally within a week, a friend of a friend called me from Arizona. A longtime family friend attended his church. He was the lead pastor of a church plant in the Phoenix, Arizona area. And long story short, they needed a new student ministry pastor, and he wanted to interview me for the job. And I was really shocked because wow. Ministry was not, I chewed tobacco, I cussed, I was not like pastoral material. It still makes me really uncomfortable when people call me Pat. Some people call me Pastor Aaron, and I can't stand that. It's really hard for me to hear that. So that opened the door to ministry as a kind of a vocation. And then how we ended up here, I did student ministry for about 5 years. I got simultaneously within a couple months at my second student ministry position at a really large church in Colorado. I was kind of like a square peg in a round hole. And my closest friend at that time committed suicide, and it really messed me up. And a month later, I resigned from my position at the church, and was kind of a dark night of the soul moment. Mm-hmm. But through that, over the next 9 months, it was very clear to us, like through multiple people reaching out to us and this kind of thing, and church planting organizations reaching out to us, that God was calling us to start a church. We had no idea where. So we were kind of open to going anywhere. And we looked at Chicago. We looked at a network in Columbus, Ohio, but I hate Ohio State. So that was a quick no.
Come on, man.
I kind of feel like there's no like reaching them. It's like they're just
that's wrong.
John's an Ohio
outside,
State.
They're
man,
outside
by
of the scope of God's love. But then we talked to a network in the Washington D.C. area, and we visited each place. I honestly thought it would be Chicago because I'm a huge Cub fan. I love Chicago. I'm a Midwest guy. But we came out here, and there's a lot of things that clicked. And we just felt like this is where God was leading us to start a church. And we started a church with my brother, Matt, and his wife, Renee, moved with us. He quit his job and got a job out here. And we started our church at my kitchen table 7 years ago, a little over 7 years ago.
Wow. And your church has gone through quite a few changes that you were telling me about, including venues. One of the venues was a pub, as I recall. What was the name of it? And can you give us a few stories about holding church in a pub?
Yeah, we actually met in two different bar venues. Our first one was actually a concert venue called the Fillmore, which is kind of a world famous venue that's out throughout the United States. Like Johnny Cash played there, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And we met there for a couple of years. And it was an awesome venue. It didn't really fit us that well. It was a little too much of a show, but it was still an amazing venue. It was really expensive. We had our kids met in a bar. Like we would go downstairs and clear out all the liquor bottles so that they wouldn't break them. And they met in a bar. Our nursery was in an old green room, so it always smelled like weed in there. So we were always spraying Febreze to try to like clear out that smell, moving kegs of beer out of the hallway so parents could walk their kids to the nursery. It's just kind of it was a surreal experience. And then we also would get bumped. Like we met on Sunday mornings, and occasionally like a big artist would play on Sunday night and they would want an early entry. and they would pay the venue $10,000 so that they could bump us and unload early. So like Mary J. Blige bumped us once, Fred Durst with Limp Bizkit, Hanson. Do you guys remember Hanson? We got bumped by Hanson. So that was, yeah. And whenever we got bumped, we would go over across the street because I'd become friends with the owner of this Irish pub. And he's a great guy, Irish guy. And so I asked him, like, hey, when we get bumped from the Fillmore, can we meet Sunday mornings before you guys open up your restaurant? And he was all for it. It totally opened to it. So we would use their pub from time to time. And then the Fillmore got so expensive that I asked Greg, the owner of McGinty's pub, I'm like, hey, can we do this every Sunday? And we came to a quick agreement, banged out a one-page contract and moved over to McGinty's pub. So we met an Irish pub for about a year and a half too.
That's awesome.
So yeah, it was quite an experience, man.
And then, where are you at now? Didn't you have kind of special circumstances that opened up for the new venue?
Yeah, I drove by this old Episcopal church, old meaning an old building. It's still an active church building. And it's just really cool looking. It has all the stained glass and just kind of got a cool vibe from it when I was driving by it one day. And I called them, and this was probably like when we were still meeting at the Fillmore, and they said, oh, we have a church that we rented out on Sunday nights to this church, but they've been meeting here for 10 years and we don't have any space. So then we were in McGinty's for a while, a few years later, and I knew our time at McGinty's was coming to an end. It was just a ton of setup. It was a lot of labor to turn that into a worship gathering venue. And so I called this church again, and I called them on a Monday, and they said, you won't believe it. Like, that church that met here for 10 years, they just had their last Sunday yesterday. And so I was like, wow. So I went over there that week, spent some time, a few weeks talking to them about it, nailing down a price. So now we meet on Sunday, like afternoons at 4:30 in this old Episcopal church. Awesome. In Silver Spring.
Is it a little better than the pub?
Yeah, it's, I gotta say the time of day is challenging. Sunday afternoons are not great.
Yeah.
For attendance, but the venue is perfect for us. Like, it's so easy to set up in there. We've got kids space for the first time ever, you know, for 5 years, our kids met in a bar and, you know, it was just not conducive to them having fun. And, now it's a much better venue for us.
So let's kind of rewind a little bit and, go back. Like, I know your parents are Christian, and your mother was actually a missionary in Africa, as I recall, at one point in her life,
yeah.
Wasn't she? So you kind of grew up in a Christian family. Would you always consider yourself religious, or was there a point in time where something clicked and you went that way?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was kind of born into it. There's never been a time where I did not believe in God. You know, like you said, my mom was a missionary kid, grew up in South Africa. My grandparents were missionaries. I kind of have that same missionary heart, kind of inherited my faith. I would say, actually, you know, my faith has been the most challenged. My most angry moments with God, where I've questioned him, yelled at him, cussed him out, have been as a pastor, which is kind of ironic. I've been an ordained minister for 14 years now, and my darkest moments in faith have all come as a pastor, which is strange.
Wow. So I guess the next thing is, you're not like you have a new kind of a new thing that I'm wanting to support and trying to help support that you've, I was kind of surprised you're doing it, but you're kind of switching gears a little bit and you're really focusing on Greece, correct?
Yeah, specifically Muslim refugees who are seeking asylum in Greece. So yeah, one of the interesting things about when we started our church was we weren't involved in like international missions. Like we didn't do anything overseas, and I was asked by some people to do different things, like to commit our church to different things like Compassion International and some other really great projects and movements. But I just did, I wanted our church to kind of decide. I didn't want to be the I didn't want to decide for our church. A few years into it, I don't know if you guys remember this, but I think this was 2015. There was a picture that circulated all over the world. It was on the front page of, you know, every online, you know, newspaper, news source. It was a young Syrian boy who was like 3 years old who had drowned while trying to cross from Turkey into Greece, and his body washed up on the shore.
Yep. And
there was a picture of him. And I saw that picture, and it just wrecked me. It just destroyed me. And that same week, a bunch of different people, individually, not collectively, called me or Carrie or texted us or emailed us and said, we got to do something about the refugee crisis. We got to get involved. And it was all these different people individually. It was very clear, like, whoa, the Spirit is moving and speaking. We need to get involved. So we started being, you know, we lived, you know, our office is 5 miles from the White House. So we have a lot of people that are at the time that were connected on Capitol Hill who worked for senators and you know, congresswomen and congressmen. And so we kind of utilized those resources and they started researching different organizations that were working with refugees that had good reputations. And we decided to give an entire Sunday offering away. So for 24 hours, you know, most of our giving's online and we promoted it on social media. We said, whatever's given to our church in this 24 hour section, whether it's online or in person, we're going to give away to these two different organizations who are serving Syrian and Afghan refugees. So we gave away around $10,000 to these two, so like $5,000 each to these two orgs. And one of those organizations reached out to me and said, hey, we really need some people on the ground in Greece, of all places. We got some stuff happening there. A lot of these people are either settling or waiting for resettlement in Greece. And we need help. We need to support some of the partners that we have on the ground there. So in 2016, I led our first trip over there with Restore Church people. There was like 8 of us. It was the first of 4 trips that we took to Greece to work with the Greek people as they served Middle Eastern refugees. And through that, the organization that we kind of came underneath their umbrella on these trips is Servant Group International. Uh-huh. And I just felt a lot of camaraderie with one of their staff members. Name's Lisa, and her and I just really clicked. We had great chemistry. And I just felt like a real common bond. And last year, I spent kind of some intense time. I felt some tension and I couldn't really put a finger on it. And every time I'd read the Bible, or I read a lot of Henry Nouwen last year, or Conversations, the phrase "the poor" kept coming to mind. Uh-huh. And I just felt very convicted and at first defensive, like, God, I'm working with the poor. Like I'm involved. I'm serving, I'm helping. The conviction was very clear of, you need to stop working and serving and you need to be with them. Like you need to be in relationship, with these people. And so that was really convicting. And so I called, I didn't know how to respond to that at first, but I figured, you know what, maybe I should try to go work for Servant Group International. So I just called them, said, hey, you know, I had to take a drink of beer. called them up. I'm trying to figure out how to condense the story, but there was mutual interest in me coming on staff at Servant Group International. The same time, locally, there's a group of like 100 Central and South American refugees that just kind of fell into our lap at our church. We have a space in our city called the Living Room. It's like an event. It's like a small event gathering center, community center type thing. Uh-huh. And they started renting it. This lady I became friends with named Lanice basically has started kind of like this underground church for these people who have all been to these detention centers, been detained, and they've been released. They all have ankle bracelets on. And she became a Christian in a detention center. She's Venezuelan. They started meeting in our space. I became friends with Lanice. Our churches started doing some worship gatherings together. Hers is not a church. It's really just a gathering. of people. So we've got like 100 Spanish speaking Central and South American refugees that are connected to our church now. And God just keeps opening these doors. I just officially went on staff with Servant Group International last month. So yeah, it's been a really interesting journey in being with and serving. I mean, when I was in high school, I didn't even know what a refugee was.
Yeah.
I really didn't. And now it seems like more and more of my life is surrounded by them. So it's really interesting.
That's really cool. I guess being Pastor Aaron, being a pastor for being a pastor for a while, I'm sure that a couple of the questions that you get are like, if you had to give the most compelling evidence for the presence of God and Jesus, like, I know those are separate things, but what, like, if you have to do like the elevator, you know, you walk into an elevator, you get the 30 seconds to 60 seconds to be able to convince someone of there is a God and Jesus is the Son of God. What is the evidence that you go to? Like, where do you go to in that situation?
Well, I would say the whole elevator conversation is impossible. I think that we live in a quickly turning post-Christian culture. Mm-hmm. I don't think the elevator conversation is possible, where you might walk down the street and bump into somebody and within a few minutes your life has changed. I don't want to like limit God. I just think that's really unusual in our culture. I actually think it starts with relationship. I don't think anybody's going to be willing to listen to anything you have to say unless they know that you love them unconditionally. There's a friendship, there's a relationship, there's trust, like all of that. And it might take years for that to happen. You know, I think of like my old neighbors here when I first met them, you know, basically telling people I'm a pastor here a lot of times is a conversation ender. I've got a little like PTSD from it. Like I try not to reveal that I'm a pastor because people will just stop talking to me. I remember I met my neighbors and they're like, what do you do? And I'm like, I'm a pastor of a church. I'm like, oh, well, we're atheists. And they just started walking away. I'm like, wait a second. And I was like, wait a second. I'm like, that, I'm not going to like, I'm not going to try to convert you. I want to be your neighbor. And, it started a friendship. Like I kind of like, it takes time to like bring those barriers and that distrust and natural disdain that a lot of people have for the church. And frankly, a lot of it is deserved.
Yeah, it's justified.
Because the American church has really done a shitty job of loving people in the near, basically for the last 250 years or so. But it's been, you know, particularly bad for the 39 years I've been an American Christian. So I think a lot of times it's just relationship. People have to trust you. They can't feel like your project. The bait and switch stuff, like I tell our people in our church a lot, like you're not like keeping your faith a secret and then all of a sudden you'd like surprise them with Jesus at some point. Like, I mean, that's bullshit. It's just going to piss them off. It's going to create distrust. Now, yeah, so that's how there's more to it, but I would say that's my answer to the.
So you don't think pointing out their faults and shaming them is the way, huh?
No. That's. Oh man.
That seems to have been the overall, you know, idea over the last few years. At least that's what you see through social media and the blips that you get on the news and things like that is a pointing finger, and it's definitely not based in love, that's for sure. So when you came back to Plainfield recently, you actually spoke at the church that I go to, and you talked about a story of someone that was at your church that I assume is probably still at your church, but it was a really touching story. Would you mind going into a little bit about that, as far as that, how that came to be and how you approached that?
Yeah, by the way, they censored me. They pulled my sermon down off the website a week after I gave it.
I know. I talked to them yesterday about it. I even talked to them, literally yesterday, I talked to them about it and tried to understand the specific reasons.
I told them when they asked me to speak, I said, okay, you're asking me to speak on hospitality. Okay, here's all I know. Like, I know a lot of people that are in the LGBTQ community, and I know a lot of immigrants, and I know how that goes over in the Midwest. And so I said, how about I write what I would say unfiltered and I submit it to you so that you guys can tell me what will work and what won't. And surprisingly, they said, hey, go with what you got. And I did. And then I think they faced a lot of backlash.
They did.
So that's understandable. I mean, my feelings weren't hurt. It was that church has given us, our church, more money than any other church. They have been an incredible support to what we're doing here in Maryland. So, yeah, so I told this story about my friend Jamie. When I met Jamie, Jamie was a man named James. He was a doctor at Walter Reed Hospital, was in the Army. And I actually baptized James. And a year or so after I baptized James, James told me that he'd been struggling with gender dysphoria all his life and felt like he was supposed to be a woman. And he told me he was going to transition into being a woman. It was a decision that we talked a lot about. And I, you know, in the midst of that, I said, look, I don't understand it. I don't know what gender dysphoria is like, but I want to walk with you through this. I'm not going anywhere. You're not like losing any status in our church. Like, you're my friend. You're my brother, soon to be sister in Christ. And I'm not going anywhere. And as James transitioned into Jamie, Jamie was an avid runner, would commonly stop at my house for like a water break, and we'd end up having dinner. And so it was quite a transition for my then like 4, 5, 6, and 7 year old to see Dr. James go to be Dr. Jamie and transition into like asking questions like, why is Dr. James dressed like mommy? Those are difficult questions to answer with your kids that are in preschool and elementary school.
Yeah.
But we said, hey, no matter what Jamie does, even if we don't understand it, we may not agree with it, we are her friend, and she always has a place at our table and in our church. And that journey continued. And I think it really, it opened up the doors for our church to connect more with the LGBTQ community. We have multiple members of our church that are part of that community. And I think I'm confident they feel safe. They feel loved unconditionally. And I think a lot of times churches try to control people's faith by putting parameters or stipulations on their engagement with the church community. And I think that's a really big mistake. I think people need to stop trying to play the Holy Spirit and just let God do his work. Since that time, Jamie's still been an active part of our church and friendship, has gotten married, had kids. It's still a really tight friendship, and it's been a really, interesting, but very blessed experience to be her friend.
I love what you're doing, man, and appreciate you. And two more really quick questions, and we'll be done here. First, what do you consider it to be saved? And I assume you consider yourself saved, but what do you think being saved means?
Oh, I would say it would be a turning point in someone's mind and heart and life where they, you know, most people in our culture have heard of Jesus. Most people in the world have. I would say saved is that moment where someone, it goes from curiosity or indifference towards him to I want him. Like, I want to follow him. I love what he's, who he is and what he's about. So when it kind of crosses from that, hey, I know who he is a little bit, but there's still indifference to, you know, just, I want to know, I want to be with him. I want to follow him. That's when I would consider someone saved.
Awesome. That's a good definition. That's mm-hmm. always interesting to hear what people think, what that is, you know, even other people that are pastors, like to hear what they consider that. I heard that definition from a different pastor last night, and it was completely different, you know. That's cool. Last question. Do you have a favorite Bible verse?
Yeah, it's Isaiah 40, chapter 40, verse 28-31. I'm going to try to recite it, but it's, do you not know, have you not heard, the Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary in his understanding no one can fathom. Young people grow tired and weary and stumble and fall, but those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint.
Any questions, John?
No. I'm real glad to hear people like you out there that take that approach to Christianity, because, you know, coming from the Midwest, you understand that it's very rule oriented. And when you go back to the roots of the New Testament, there was no rules, and everything that you're talking about, you know, there's so much of our population out there that shut Jesus out based off their experience with people that are considered Christians. An interesting thing in my BNI group, is a business networking group, we met yesterday, and one of the visitors is our visitor host. The guy actually said, this is how a church should be, because we were all just kind of, nobody was judging. It was a large group of people that met, and a lot of them had never met each other before, but there was a warm feeling to it. And so many churches, and I go to a Southern Baptist church, so you don't get any more rule-oriented than that. But it doesn't affect my view that still comes back to love is the greatest thing, whatever their situation is. And the problem that people have is, or that humanity has, we want to put emphasis on sin, like this one's worse than that one, when you don't, it's all bad. It doesn't matter what your sin is all bad. So that's where I think the church, church as we know it, it goes wrong. We eliminate people because we think their sin is greater than the one we have, you know, and we impress that on people, but it turns people away from Christ, and that's the exact opposite of what should happen. So,
Well, Aaron, thank you very much for joining us, and we'll see maybe a couple weeks before we have another episode, John. I don't know who's coming in next, but I look forward to it. It's always fun. Thank you very much for being a good sport and joining us, man. We appreciate
it. Thanks for having me on, man. It was really fun to talk to you guys, talk about this, and think about this out loud. It was fun. Thanks, man.
Siri, turn it up. Google, turn it up. Alexa, volume 10.
Wait, hold up. I think they hate people tell me take my time, right? Nah, they tired of waiting. They say, crazy, so you so, man. For real?